Welcome to this episode of Industries in Transition. A holistic look at the challenges, triumphs, and lessons learned as businesses drive change to build a sustainable future. Hello and welcome to this special series. I'm your host, Lisa Othner-Gauss, and in today's episode, we are exploring what it takes to finance innovation and new technology projects essential to moving the needle on sustainability. Find out how some of the most innovative players in the industry are doing exactly that. Let's welcome Mei Liu, Investment Director at Gen Zero. Hey Mei, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks Lisa.
Sid Manjeshwar, Vice President, Corporate Treasurer, Investor Relations at Air Product. Hi Sid, how are you doing?
Doing great, Lisa, and such a pleasure to be here.
And Henrik Graber, Global Head of Credit Markets at Standard Chartered. Hi Henrik, how are things with you today?
Hi Lisa, very well.
Energy experts and industry executives agree that technology availability is the most important factor in accelerating the energy transition. We have made remarkable progress, but it is not yet fast enough to be truly transformative. In high-income countries, 81% of green investments are funded by the private sector. But in emerging and developing countries, the private share is a mere 14%. A massive scale-up of energy transition technologies requires a massive scale-up of capital investment, and finding a good balance between short-term profitability and long-term sustainability remains a challenge for many organizations. So let's dive right in and find out how our guests are doing it. Sid, Air Products has been around since the 1940s. Your company's history is one of continuous innovation. NASA was one of your first clients, and hundreds and thousands of tons of industrial gases you supplied helped NASA to send the first rocket to the moon. Do you think innovation is simply in your DNA?
Hey, great question, Lisa, and absolutely. Over the last 80 plus years at Air Products, we've accumulated a wealth of unique experiences and expertise safely executing our projects and delivering those molecules globally. And alongside that, we've built a host of technology patents and know-how, which are supported by our talented and dedicated, innovative global employee base of over 23,000 employees today. As industrial gases go, they're absolutely essential to so many processes, and they drive improved performance for our customers, reducing their emissions, improving quality and yield and productivity. Just a simple few examples would be the hydrogen that we produce as the largest producer of hydrogen globally today enables the production of lower sulfur transportation fuels. The oxygen enables cleaner combustion, and the modified atmospheric packaging helps preserve food that we buy in our grocery stores today. So leveraging all those core capabilities today, we build the right solution for a specific situation for our customers or a particular country looking to meet their climate goals with low carbon hydrogen. And today we made an industry-leading capital commitment to accelerating the energy transition with more than $15 billion in capital with our first mover, first-of-a-kind projects.
Gen Zero is a very new company. Temasek only launched it as an investment platform aimed at accelerating decarbonization last year, back in June 2022. What makes Gen Zero unique is the way you approach investments. Tell us all about that.
Thanks, Lisa. What differentiates us is that we seek to be intentional in the way we deliver climate impact. This means that our success is measured by the extent we are able to generate financial returns, as well as the climate impact through our investments. There are three approaches that make us different. Firstly, we take on a holistic approach to decarbonization pathways, which includes nature, tech, and carbon ecosystem enablers. We invest in tech-based solutions such as sustainable aviation fuel, or carbon capture in hard-to-abate sectors. We also invest in nature-based solutions which restores natural ecosystems, such as reforestation projects and nature projects with underlying economic activity, such as rice decarbonization. The third focus area that Gen Zero invests in is what we call carbon ecosystem enablers. So we invest in technical advisory companies and carbon marketplaces like Climate Impact X to create a more robust carbon ecosystem. Our three investment focus areas not only capture crucial decarbonization pathways, but also provides natural hedges given their distinct investment characteristics. Secondly, as a double bottom line investor, we aim to achieve a financial return above our cost of equity. The third approach that makes us unique is that we are focused on building up the carbon ecosystem. We do so by participating in thought leadership initiatives to help drive new standards and foster great awareness around decarbonization.
I'd like to pivot our conversation now and take a closer look at hydrogen. Today, green hydrogen is often mentioned alongside technologies that play an important role in the energy transition mix. So Sid, what is green hydrogen and why is it so important?
So great question, Lisa, and very topical today with the climate change events we're witnessing globally. The world's future is going to depend on low carbon or zero carbon solutions. Air Products is low carbon hydrogen, both blue and green, are key to accelerating the energy transition. Now, in very simplistic terms, today all the hydrogen produced globally is termed gray, which is based on fossil fuel production. Blue is similarly done, but in that instance, you can capture almost all or a large portion of the CO2. And that gives you different shades of blue. And with green, your feedstock is basically a renewable energy, which you feed an electrolyzer and produce green hydrogen. Because there are a ton of things you can do with electricity directly, where you produce renewable electricity and consume it. But there are a lot of applications where that's either impossible or impractical. And that's where we think hydrogen, green and blue, plays a very critical role. And simple examples in hard-to-abate sectors would be if hydrogen was used as a fuel in mobility, that would decarbonize heavy transport, trucking, shipping, trains, airplanes. Today, hydrogen is used as a feedstock in many industrial applications. So that would include steel, chemicals, petrochemicals, refining, cement, glass manufacturing. And then lastly, hydrogen as an energy source in power generation and in industrial and other heating needs.
Sid, how did you get the banks on board?
We went through that journey recently until we got to financial close on our first of its kind large mega scale green hydrogen project called NEOM in northwest Saudi Arabia. And the question ultimately comes down to how does one make a project more bankable, especially when it's the first of its kind, because banks naturally tend to be creatures of habits and look to precedents in terms of how they structure and finance deals. So if you think of takes two to tango, in this case, first is you need a group of constructive, very innovative and supportive lenders, which in the case of NEOM, Standard Chartered played that role flawlessly. And then second, you need a group of sponsors that has developed a very bankable project in terms of having the right economic value proposition and the right risk frameworks. So in this case, the project has three sponsors between us, Air Products, and NEOM, which is basically Saudi Arabian PIF's investment vehicle in NEOM. We've got over 60 years of experience in moving and producing hydrogen safely. We're the largest producer of hydrogen today. Similarly, Aqua Power has developed tens of gigawatts of renewable projects globally, and NEOM brings their expertise in picking the land, developing the land, and making the project ready, helping with permitting, etc. So truly a very compelling economic and strategic rationale with complementary skill sets. And we put the right commercial frameworks in place. Air Products is the EPC contractor with years of experience. We have the right commercial solid offtake arrangement, which banks could lean to, where our AA2 balance sheet is what people take a lot of comfort in. So that's one large piece of how this was all put together. But as we develop and Standard Chartered banks projects globally, I think one other important aspect is, in addition to an offtake or other ways you can structure and mitigate the risks in a project, I think having solid and consistent policy signals globally is also very important, because policy incentives and frameworks also help de-risk projects to a large extent. Depending on the region of the world, if you've got policy support or not, you've got to think of how you can de-risk the projects for lenders in the absence of government subsidies and incentives as well.
Thank you. And I want to come back to the government's role in making energy transition a reality in a little while. But Henrik, just to bring you in on a conversation for a minute. So Standard Chartered, if I heard correctly, was mentioned as a bank willing to go the extra mile to make these new technology projects bankable. So how do you make that happen?
Thank you, Lisa. I think we've had some excellent comments from May and Sid around innovation and how we move financing forward. One of the key factors, I think, is making projects bankable. And a link to that is very much having the right policies and frameworks. At Standard Chartered, we're extremely focused on developing new technologies and the ability to finance them. One of our goals is to mobilize $300 billion in sustainable finance by December 2030. A lot of these innovative technologies are new to the industry and actually new to investors. Areas of future growth are going to be green hydrogen, carbon capture, storage systems, batteries, clean transport, and many new exciting areas. We have many investors who are interested in these sectors. We're very excited about the future. I think a few aspects that we look at when we do transactions, particularly new innovative areas, are focusing on superior due diligence and ensuring that the structuring of the transactions is solid and meets the investors' requirements as much as they can. We want to continue to bring new capital into the markets. It's a very significant sphere of supporters and stakeholders who come together to launch these transactions and enable them. I think that's maybe not always quite as visible when a financing package is launched as how much work has gone into these transactions, particularly around the entire value chain of green, blue, and the H2 chain. Financing is going to help drive the innovation and is going to facilitate the building of these projects and is going to be key in terms of hitting net zero targets in the future. We're very excited about the future. And I think some of the comments made here, I can only continue to endorse.
May, you mentioned earlier that one of the areas of focus of Gen Zero are climate tech investments. And I know you are particularly interested in the carbon financing aspect. What are you looking out for?
Gen Zero was set up to be a patient investor because climate change is a long-term challenge. We are able to take a more flexible time horizon in supporting investee companies as there are no mandatory exit requirements. Climate tech, and in particular deep tech solutions, is relatively nascent and tends to have a long gestation period. So let me speak about our key investment considerations. First, we focus on climate tech solutions for hard-to-abate sectors such as aviation. The aviation sector, for instance, emitted about 1 gigaton of CO2 in 2019, and this figure could grow to 2 to 3 gigatons by 2050 if left unabated. Sustainable aviation fuel, or SAF for short, is estimated to be able to abate 65% of emissions required. SAF is produced from biological resources such as agricultural residues or waste such as used cooking oil rather than fossil-derived fuel. Today, we have invested in SAF solutions and continue to hunt actively in this space. Second, we are looking for solutions that will have commercial viability and scalability by 2030 so that they can make an impact in the next few decades. So continuing on my aviation analogy, we target SAF opportunities because SAF is deployable today as a drop-in solution. That means there is no need to adapt or overhaul existing airport fueling systems or aircraft engines. SAF can be safely mixed with conventional jet fuel because of similar chemical and physical characteristics. The third consideration is the quality of investments, which relates to scalability. We target companies that have demonstrated the potential for large-scale commercial production and therefore sizable climate impact. As data-driven investors, we look for operating validation, which may be demonstrated at a pilot level with the potential to scale up to commercial levels. As a climate tech investor, we care about unit economics, and that means solutions that have a pathway to achieve cost parity with incumbent technologies for wide-scale adoption. the final investment consideration is the ability of the climate solution to leverage carbon finance. In reality, many low or negative carbon solutions today have much higher production costs than conventional fossil incumbents, and it will take years before they reach cost parity. That's where carbon markets come in to plug the financing gap. SAF, for example, is 3 to 5 times more costly than fossil jet incumbents. Corporates and logistics companies have expressed willingness to use SAF to reduce air travel carbon footprint. These customers provide valuable sources of voluntary financing that can help to reduce the cost premium. We recently invested in a SAF producer in the US, which has demonstrated the investment considerations I've outlined. CleanJoule has a breakthrough technology to produce high-performance, cost-effective SAF from agricultural residues and other waste biomass. And we invested into CleanJoule to support the further development of the innovative and proprietary process. And that's with the aim to lower SAF production costs and drive adoption of SAF globally.
There must be some gaps and hurdles that you still haven't quite overcome. What are they?
The recent years have seen a growing recognition for the need for climate finance. While there has been a flurry of venture capital funding to back startups with innovative solutions, the biggest funding gap is in technology deployment. That means project developers that need capital to pay for plant development, such as SAF production plants. Climate tech production is capital intensive, which can amount to hundreds of millions to several billions of dollars. But funding for first-of-a-kind plants can be elusive. And Sid and Henrik have spoken about this as well. Capital of this sort normally comes from banks and infrastructure investors, and these investors often need to see established stable cash flows. They want to see the technical risk completely retired and assess the products based entirely on market and operational conditions. The risk aversion towards funding first-of-a-kind plants has stymied project development. Blended finance can play a significant role in this regard. Government funding, like the United States Inflation Reduction Act tax credits, for example, provides SAF producers with a tax credit of $1.25 per gallon. The voluntary carbon market will also allow us to crowd in carbon finance to lower the production costs and scale adoption. Finally, we recognize the need for an ecosystem approach involving stakeholders, including technologists, financiers, and policymakers to come together to scale climate tech and production. Ultimately, while science and engineering can develop decarbonization solutions, customers' willingness to pay will remain key. So it is important for us to look at all avenues to lower the green premium for wide-scale adoption.
All of you have alluded to the fact that today's energy transition is not only driven by economics. Public policy and government support, as you all mentioned, play a really important role in accelerating the transitions. I wonder, Sid, what do you see specific governments doing? How are they incentivizing you?
If we jog our memories back to, say, 100, 150 years ago, when there were several energy transitions that we witnessed going from wood to coal and then from coal to oil, all those were driven primarily by economics. Today's energy transition, especially starting with renewables about 2 decades ago to hydrogen today, aren't entirely driven by economics. It's driven by public policy and the need to effectuate climate change. Because driving the energy transition to avoid the impacts of climate change, while at the same time enabling global energy security, is probably one of the most critical policy issues of our time. I think in the last 2 years, what we've witnessed is a seismic shift forward in terms of regulatory and monetary support, starting with the Inflation Reduction Act in the US, the Clean Hydrogen Investment Tax Credit Act in Canada, the Renewable Energy Directives, and the whole alphabet soup of other incentives in Europe. Japan has now committed 15 trillion yen. So this is a clear, firm commitment to the energy transition and the critical role hydrogen plays. And what I'd also add is, while the colors of hydrogen are very interesting, given this market is going to be so big, all participants are welcome. Ultimately, what we're looking for is delivering hydrogen with the lowest carbon intensity and with different subsidy mechanisms. The IRA incentivizes low carbon intensity. It doesn't pick colors in terms of winners or losers, but lets companies, coming back to your initial question of DNA of innovation, figure out the best technological configurations with the lowest carbon intensity. So the IRA heavily subsidizes producers, while in Europe, the subsidies are more focused on the consumer side. But ultimately, all are trying to solve the issue from different avenues. And policy change and constant and consistent policy signals are incredibly important to drive this forward.
Sadly, we have to leave it here. I would like to thank everyone who has been part of this podcast for their contributions. Thank you to our audience for tuning in. I'm Lisa Hodnogaus. Goodbye for now. Thank you for tuning in to Industries in Transition, brought to you by Standard Chartered. Supporting clients for over 150 years, Standard Chartered empowers businesses and inspires change through ambitious social and environmental initiatives. Standard Chartered, driving commerce and prosperity whilst contributing to sustainable growth across the world's most dynamic markets.